quite often you'll see riders in their last year of contract perform better than they ever have because they're under pressure to perform. And this year very much is a situation like that, where you have many riders in the peloton who are really under the gun to perform. And so you might see some really interesting results as a result of that.
Welcome to the Canadian Cycling Magazine podcast. I'm Matthew Piaro, editor of the magazine and host of the pod. At the beginning of May, the UCI announced the new road calendar for 2020. One Canadian Cycling Magazine writer has dubbed it 100 Crazy Days. The racing runs from the beginning of August to early November, which is, you know, when cyclocross usually wraps up in most of Canada. In the new road calendar, the Giro d'Italia follows the Tour de France after just 12 days. The Giro and the Vuelta a España later overlap by 6 days. The Spring Classics follow the Criterium de Dauphiné. Il Lombardia, traditionally the season closer, is one of the first races in August. It's topsy-turvy, all right. The Women's Tour has seen the creation of its own Paris-Roubaix, but it's already had a few races that were part of the new calendar drop out. They include the Vargarda West Sweden races and the Ladies Tour of Norway. I wondered what this plan could mean for riders and teams. Was it realistic? Was it doable? And if it was, what kind of racing could we see? I brought my questions to Michael Berry. Today, he and his wife Didi run Mariposa Bicycles. But from 1995 to 2012, Michael raced on the road with the best in the world. Have a listen to his take on the 100 Crazy Days. Michael Berry, in a regular road season, what does a rider's preparation look like?
So a regular pro road season more or less almost begins just after it ends. The final races that a professional cycling team will race are in October. Some even go into November or late October. So the riders will have, you know, 6 weeks or less at home before they go away to their first training camp, which will be just before Christmas. The team will get together. They'll ride together, do some physical testing, see where the riders are at. The initial planning for the season will begin then. And soon after Christmas, they're already back at another training camp where they'll do intense intervals and some motor pacing and a lot of long rides very soon after they leave that training camp. A lot will even leave directly from the training camp to the first races of the year. They'll race nonstop more or less every weekend or every second weekend until October. So there's really very little rest during a pro racing season, especially these days where bike races have become, every bike race has a level of importance where the teams are really fighting for the victories nonstop throughout the year. Whereas 20 years ago, 15 years ago, it was less so like that. Before, teams would be really prioritize the Grand Tours, the World Cups, some of the classics, and the rest of the races were kind of races to gain fitness or didn't have as high a priority. Whereas now the riders are under pressure all the time to perform. So the season is quite relentless now.
So even in normal times, the season is relentless and there's pressure to perform at races. As you mentioned, there's no longer those kind of training races or those races you can maybe not worry about so much. So looking to this new UCI calendar that's come out, it's been out for a few weeks now. We're talking in mid-June. Does this compressed 100 days of racing then further heighten this sort of pressure to perform and stress on riders?
I think the riders this year will be under more stress than ever to perform. The economic situation in cycling is not great right now, as it is in most business throughout the world. So teams have lost sponsors. Sponsors have scaled back their funding to teams. Races are really under pressure as well because they haven't been put on and then there's less sponsorship for the racing. So generally the economic situation in cycling isn't great. Riders will be fighting really hard for the results because there are fewer races. to get results in, and those results will have more importance to them. The riders will really have to prove themselves. The teams will have to prove themselves to the sponsors with the hopes of, you know, re-signing them or impressing new sponsors for the following season. So it is going to be a really challenging season, I think, for the riders. It'll also make the racing, I think, quite interesting. The races will be very hard fought. The riders have had a prolonged period where they've been able to rest, recover, and let their bodies rejuvenate, get healthy and strong, which most pros don't have that length of time off away from the races at home just to train consistently, eat well, and rest. You know, 6 weeks in a normal off season is not a whole lot. And now they have had this prolonged period. So I think a number of riders will be come into the 2020 racing season really raring to go and extremely like healthy and fit. So I wouldn't be surprised if some of the races are faster than ever.
That's interesting, because on one hand, I would have thought this prolonged period where many riders faced lockdowns in the countries that they lived in, their training would be derailed in a sense. But your comment made me think of something Michael Wood said, that he did break his femur in March at Paris-Nice, but he also said he was taking this time to relax and even get fat. So I take that get fat with a grain of salt. But he's to your point, he's recovering. Could he be coming into his season, and could others be coming into their season with just this level of endurance that will allow them to keep a high pace from August 1st to early November?
I don't think it'll be overly hard for the riders to stay fit for those 3 months, especially if certain riders peak at the beginning and at the end. The difficulty is if you're doing grand tours back to back, that'll be a lot harder. So that if, you know, riders are planning to do the Tour de France and the Giro, there's not a whole lot of rest between them. If the tour, I would imagine, will be extremely fast and hard fought, it always is. And then to have 2 weeks, I think, or even less at home before traveling to the Giro, it's going to be tough. And so holding fitness through that period will be more difficult. The one thing, you know, like leading into this compressed season after a big break, the riders now don't need to use the races so much to gain fitness. There are certain riders who use the races to really gain their race legs in the final weeks leading up to a big event. But with power meters, like just the coaching that the riders have now, data analysis, they can get a really good gauge of their fitness level. The team has a really good gauge of their fitness level. Obviously, performance in races is different than training. So team management always will like to see how riders are going to perform at a race, even though I've known a lot of guys who are flying up mountains or posting phenomenal times and power data in training, and then they get to the race and they're pretty flat. For the management, it is always good to see the riders in one final event before a big race. But generally speaking, for gaining fitness, they won't need a ton of racing to be in super shape for the season.
How much can virtual racing make up for that lack of real racing? Can that get someone prepped for racing out on the IRL, the in real life roads?
I think the virtual racing's good for gaining fitness, but it's nowhere near the same as what a road race would be like, or you know, real racing, I guess you could say. I don't know, racing on the road would be like. It's completely different. I mean, sitting on a static trainer indoors in a controlled environment is very different than going up and down mountains and racing with, you know, 200 guys sprinting towards finish lines, bumping elbows. And there are so many variables in races that go far beyond just brute force and fitness. And cycling is a physical but also mental and tactical game that you can't really replicate or train for on Zwift or indoors. But that said, I mean, any kind of efforts indoors are going to be good for fitness. So it's not detrimental to be racing indoors. It's just not going to be a massive benefit or replicate what a bike race on the road is.
If you take a look at the spread of the races this year and how things have been juggled, are there any races or maybe even race organizers that seem to have gotten the short end of the stick when it comes to this new calendar?
When you look at the calendar, it's obviously really heavy with the ASO, the RCS races, all the big prominent races. Economically, I think it's going to be really difficult for the smaller races as, you know, a year away without an influx of money and then just getting everything going again might be challenging in the future. Obviously, the ASO, the UCI, the RCS, they want to protect their races, their businesses. So they've prioritized those races, and those organizing bodies have the greatest influence on cycling. So that's why, you know, we see all the prominent races in there. And I mean, it also makes sense because from an economic standpoint, those are the races that are interesting to the public and will draw the most attention.
Do you think even with the Tour de France and its start in August, its sort of prime position in the calendar, do you think it may too be at a disadvantage? Because usually it starts, you know, at the beginning of July, end of June, and even casual cycling fans, ones who do not follow maybe Amstel Gold or even the Giro, they know where to find the Tour. Could it be lost in people's or consciousness or even a general sporting fan's sort of sporting world?
I think very much so. The Tour de France has attracted massive crowds through the years because it is in July when most of Europe is on vacation and most of North America, well, most of the world is on vacation really. And so people travel to watch the race. People are at home. They have time to watch the race. It's in the summer. It's beautiful in France. So it's attractive watching races on television when it's nice and sunny, and it's attractive watching them on the side of the road when it's nice and sunny as well. So that spot in the calendar is in July is ideal for holding a bike race. I remember when I was racing, we often said that, you know, if the Giro was in the summer in July, there would be far more people watching that race than the Tour, just because the crowds in May in the Giro are amazing and people are working. The other aspect is who knows even whether or not crowds will be able to gather at the side of the road, whether the riders will be able to have any contact with those crowds, what level of contact the riders will be able to have amongst themselves as well. There are so many variables that are still unknown. So we really don't have an idea of how the epidemiologists and the governments will allow sporting events to unfold. So I think there are a lot of question marks around it. And it certainly will be a very, very different Tour de France and also racing season this year.
Could this season be harder on support staff than the riders themselves?
I think the season's going to be extremely hard on both the riders, support staff, management, just because of all the question marks around it, all the unknowns around it. I'm sure that they're going to have to take far greater precautions when it comes to protecting everybody's health when they're at the races to avoid any possible spread of the virus or, you know, contagion. So that's going to add a whole other level of stress. And that's going to be compounded with the fact that they've been away from the races for a prolonged period, not knowing really what their futures hold. Economically, as I said before, the cycling is very precarious at the moment. So there's a whole other level of stress on that, where the riders will be fighting for contracts, to re-sign contracts for the coming year, trying to find teams. Teams will be trying to find sponsors. So it really complicates things. And as a result, it'll be pretty stressful. And then when you look also at the number of races back-to-back, it appears that there's a lot of races going on at the same time. But really, when you look at what a pro-level team, a regular racing season for them, quite often they'll have two or three programs running at once. So the management's fairly accustomed to that, and the riders are as well. Like you'll often have a classics team in one part of the world and another team racing in another part of the world, or you know, a team at the Tour de France and a team at the Tour of Austria. So teams are accustomed to running several programs at once, and they have the vehicles and the staff to accommodate that. So from that standpoint, it's that won't be overly stressful. I think just the unknowns around everything are going to cause a lot of stress. And it's just, you know, everybody's accustomed to going into a racing season sort of knowing what's going to happen and how things will unfold. That's not all the case anymore.
What about travel outside of Europe? A lot of these events are located in Europe, but there's the two Canadian Grand Prix, and there are some events in China for both the men and the women. I guess that would add a higher level of complication and stress and unknowns for these teams.
As much as I'd like to see the Canadian races happen, I'm doubtful that it will occur, just because international travel is going to be extremely complicated, especially if athletes or anybody traveling is expected to quarantine on either end of their travel date. So if you can imagine a whole peloton of riders coming over to North America or going to China, staying in quarantine for 2 weeks before the race and then again for 2 weeks after the race, it's logistically difficult. And then you also have the other aspect where cycling draws athletes and staff from all over the world. You have different countries all over the world with different government policies, different levels of COVID within their populations. And then you're putting all those athletes together and staff in one place under one roof in one hotel. It's pretty risky. So I'm doubtful that the pro peloton will be traveling overseas unless they somehow can figure out how to keep everybody in one spot and really control them tightly. Cycling is very different than soccer or many other sports where they're playing in stadiums. The teams are always together and they don't have a ton of contact with other teams other than when they're playing matches, obviously. So I think it'll be fairly complicated for teams to be traveling across the ocean to race for 1 or 2 days.
Could this season create different opportunities for different riders or new opportunities for different riders? I'm thinking in previous years, we've seen maybe Thibaut Pinot or Steven Kruijswijk do well in a Grand Tour, but there's always, let's say, a Team Sky or Ineos who just have their lock on things and their program so dialed. Could this season throw teams maybe like Ineos just off a little bit to allow opportunities for other people?
A different season and a different approach to the season, it changes the variables. And when you change the variables, the outcomes can easily change. That said, you know, Ineos has a massive budget. They have the majority of the best riders in the peloton. They have a ton of options for pretty much every Grand Tour and race they ride. And they're extremely good at controlling the variables and planning. So it'll be difficult for the other teams to skew that process and their goals just because they've really figured it out. And they also have the budget to tackle change really quickly and effectively. But from, you know, a spectator standpoint, I think the season coming up is completely different, and there will be riders who are mentally not as well prepared, maybe physically not as well prepared, and others who are extremely well prepared and really motivated. I mean, quite often you'll see riders in their last year of contract perform better than they ever have because they're under pressure to perform. And this year very much is a situation like that, where you have many riders in the peloton who are really under the gun to perform. And so you might see some really interesting results as a result of that.
What races do you think Peter Sagan should do?
That's an interesting question. If I was his director, team management, I would probably say go to the Tour de France and really focus on that, because obviously that's the premier event in cycling. It gains, you know, from a sponsorship perspective, from pretty much every perspective, it's the most important event, and as it garners the most attention. The races after that, he's phenomenal in the classics, and he's always really exciting to watch in the classics. So it would be neat to see him go and race those. He's more or less guaranteed to perform in a lot of those races, especially with a little bit of a break after the Tour de France. he'll have the fitness to perform well in those. I know he's talked about doing the Giro, and I'm not sure what his ambitions would be in doing the Giro. There's very little rest after the Tour de France. The one aspect that would be, you know, one reason it would be probably beneficial for him to do the Tour and the Giro is that the riders won't have much racing at all this year. So just accumulating more race days, so doing two of the Grand Tours, will be beneficial going into the 2021 season. Just having that bulk of racing and the volume is always beneficial going into the next year.
Same question for Michael Woods. What races should the Canadian do?
Well, as a Canadian and as a fan of his, I would love to see him race in the Tour de France. I think probably on that team, Rigoberto Urán will be the team leader. And also, he's coming off of a really serious injury. Whether, you know, his level of recovery when he starts racing will be interesting to see. Like an injury like that is, it takes a while to come back from. So maybe the Giro would be a better race. I think the climbing in the Giro and just the race generally might suit him even better than the Tour de France. There are super steep climbs, and overall, that race might suit his abilities a little bit better.
And finally, to the women's calendar, there's not as much overlap with the various races, but there is at one point. So let's say Leah Kirchman, does she do the Tour of Chongmen Island or the new Paris-Roubaix?
The women's schedule is really pretty straightforward. I think there's not, as you said, there's not a lot of overlap at all. I would personally probably not be super keen to travel to China to race at this time. So if I was her coach, director, or whatever, I would suggest she stay in Europe and race the end of the season there and not travel too much, and then just finish the season off in Europe and start planning for the coming year.
There's still so much speculation about the calendar. We've seen even some of the women's races that were initially included at the beginning drop off, including the Women's Tour of Norway. I suspect strongly that there will be more changes to the schedule. How optimistic are you about, you know, let's say most of these races running or a few of these races running?
I would not doubt at all that this calendar will change several times, and I would be very surprised if they were even able to race through the fall. When you really look at where the health of the global population is right now, economically, how countries are doing, and you know, cycling is a pretty low priority when you step out of, you know, the cycling world bubble, and you look at it with perspective. I think we have to be respectful of the health of the general population and really question whether it's safe for the riders, for the staff, and also for the spectators and all the populations of where the peloton will be traveling, whether it's really worth putting everybody at risk for a few bike races. I really question that, especially if we've heard that the epidemiologists have said that there's a pretty good chance that there'll be a spike in cases again in the fall, which is when a lot of these races are scheduled to occur. So I question really whether we'll have a racing season at all. And in the grand scheme of things, like, bike racing is entertainment. And as much as I love to watch bike races and as much as I loved racing my bike, I think globally we have far greater priorities right now, and we need to take care of those first.
I appreciate your answers, Michael. That last one may not be the bit of optimism that cycling fans are maybe hoping for, but it's you make really excellent points, and it really does remind us that, yeah, cycling is our passion, but it is, you know, in the grand scheme of things, there are bigger things at play, more important things at work, and I guess while we all hope to see cycling, we will maybe temper our expectations.
You know, the upside to all of this is that more people are riding bikes than I've ever seen in Toronto. And I think that's the case throughout a lot of Europe as well. So from a pro cycling perspective and from a racing perspective and just from a local cycling perspective, a commuting perspective, there couldn't be anything greater happening. 5 years, 10 years from now, I'm sure that there will be many great racers who come out of this. Just because more people are being introduced to cycling. And when you look at how cycling has cycled, but over the last, the popularity of cycling has changed over the last 30, 40 years, it's quite often different events that occur, whether economic or just a rider inspiring a population to start getting on bikes and racing. It's events like this that occur that really introduce more people to cycling and racing benefits as a result. And, in the last few years, the number of youth riding bikes has really declined and the number of youth racing bikes has really declined. And I would say in the last 3-4 months, I've never seen as many kids riding in Toronto riding on the trails and just keen to be out and having fun. And that is super inspiring. And that's really the upside to all of this. So whether or not there's a racing season, I think we can all be content that more people are riding bikes. And ultimately, that's the best thing.
Those are optimistic words to end on. Michael, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
And that's the episode. It's put together by me, Matthew Piorro. I had help from web editors Rob Sterney, Terry McCall, and Lily Hansen-Gillis. The episode is produced by Adam Killick. He composed the music, too. Thanks to Ontario Creates for its support. And thank you for listening. Please rate and review the show. Do ride safely, and I'll talk to you later.